right, everyone, welcome to the first ever Flight Test After Hours podcast. I got three great guys here with me today. This is something a little different. I know maybe some of you have already listened to the Flight Test podcast, but this is going to be something a little bit different. What we'd like to do is just kind of relate to you guys out there. We might make you laugh, we might make you cry, we might make you angry, but in the long run, we just kind of want to relate, we want to tell stories, we want to talk. I think maybe down the road we might get into some reviews on stuff. So there's a lot of stuff we're going to get into that it's going to be a lot different than the regular Flight Test podcast. So what we came up with, the name we're going to call this is going to be Flight Test After Hours. And what this is kind of going to be like is I was in the motocross industry for years, and we had a little thing we'd call bench racing, where we'd just sit around and talk about racing and what went on and who crashed. Well, this is going to be kind of similar, so I thought maybe we'd kind of call this bench flying. I don't know how that sounds, so that's something a little bit different. But what we're going to kind of do here is we're going to talk about just anything that happened throughout the week. I think we might do a little bit of flight test behind the scenes, especially since we got you here, Alex. You know, mm-hmm. We might dig up some dirt, or maybe David did something, you know, how he usually almost cuts a finger off weekly or something like that, that we might sneak in there.
Three of us have actually been a part of flight test in more than one way for quite a while, so we do kind of have a inside look at the flight test itself. So
right.
See, why don't we introduce ourselves, by the way?
Yeah, let's get into that.
Who is this lovely man that's talking on the microphone?
I'm Chris Ron Keglione, and you might have heard me before. I was on a podcast earlier where we sat around and talked about some beginner stuff and mistakes that we did. But anyway, it's been a long process, and we thought we'd just do something a little bit different. So one of the guys I brought in today actually is a guy who really got me into flying, really drug me around and got me going. And he's also the guy that found Flight Test. I mean, I would have never known about it, known anything, who they were, whatever, but the man to my left here is Pat Humbert.
Hello.
And Pat, we're going to get into you here in a little bit more. And then next we got Alex Savada.
Yep. Hey, hello.
Alex. And all of you have known Alex. He works here full time. Everybody sees him around the shop. He's the one that usually answers the phone.
And responds to emails.
So he's always around here. And then the other guy we got over here is Wayne.
Hi, guys.
The infamous Wayne, who I know we used to get a lot of emails and stuff on. Who's the guy in the video that we hardly ever see and never talks? So we got some great guys here. First thing, let's see what we want to get into is, before I forget, let's do this. We got, if you guys have any questions, any thoughts, any things that you want to discuss, we got Flight Test After Hours on Twitter, and that's at FT After Hours. So if you have anything, any questions, maybe something you want to talk about, hit us up on Twitter, and that's at FT After Hours. Hit us up. Also, if you want to send some email, you can email me at chris@flighttest.com. You know, I was thinking the other day, I know, Alex, you're not married, but maybe for the other two here, have you ever went out flying? Maybe you were by yourself and you had an amazing day, or something happened, or you almost crashed or whatever, and then you went home and you're talking about it, and the wife's sitting there, and you're like, oh, honey, you should have seen this. I was doing this. And she gives you that funny look like, okay, honey, that's really nice. And then you're like, oh, man, but it was so exciting. Well, this podcast here is something where, you know, we can sit down and talk about that and try to share it with everybody. And hopefully we get some responses and you guys like it, and we can continue to do this. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get into you guys a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit more of how you guys got started and what you like to fly. First off, Pat, though, what normally do you like to fly? What interests you?
Anything that can be repaired very easily and very quickly. You know me, I just don't have a whole lot of patience, and I'm very detail oriented, but when it comes to that, not so much.
You just want to pull it out, fire it up, and go, right?
I do, you know. Yeah. And if it flies sideways, that's okay. I'm not looking for perfection.
Sounds like my dad, kind of.
You know, and that's funny because you mentioned that. It's like when I first started flying, or had I went down to the hobby shop and I said I want something to fly, sell me an airplane, and you know, being a full-scale pilot, I'm thinking, you know what, this is going to be so easy. I'm going to pull this thing out of the box. I know what exactly everything does, and you know, P-factor. I mean, I'm just going to pull this thing out, and I'm going to crank it around. Well, little did I find out, that didn't last 30 seconds. But I think you were saying your dad's kind of was the same way, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my dad flies full-scale for a living, and I think I mentioned it in one of the flight test episodes that it doesn't translate at all, really. If you can be the best pilot, full-scale pilot in the world, or vice versa, I'm sure that an RC pilot going to full scale, it would be just as challenging. So it's kind of interesting. And my dad's the same way. He's very detail oriented. I mean, he's you know, he plans all these trips and does all these flight paths and coordinates and weights and math and all this stuff. And then if you see his RC plane, you'd never believe that he flies real ones, because it's more hot glue than it is EPP. It's he's got like a hot glue armor coating across his whole plane. So
and that brings me up to actually, I quit flying for a while, but like, you know, I had the Super Cub, and I crashed a few times, and I had some Warbirds, and I crashed a few of those, and I kind of got frustrated. And then, like, my problem was, if it was, like, over 5-mile-an-hour wind, I didn't want to go out and fly because the plane was jumping all over. I'd get all nervous and sweating, and it was no fun. So, like, if it wasn't dead calm, you know, I'd be like, forget it. So I got out of it for a while. But what brought me back in was when Horizon Hobby brought out that T-28, mm-hmm. you know, and it was all made of foam, and I was watching the videos, and, you know, that thing flew so good. I'm like, that's it. I'm just going to buy one. So I was flying it around a little bit, and that with the Hobby Zone Super Cub, and I had a couple incidents with the T-28. I was trying to learn inverted, and I slammed that thing into the ground like 3 times, and I was like, that's it. I'm done. I'm just going to fly straight and level. I'm going to go around in a circle, and I'm like, that's it. No more. So I went over to Jackson High School to fly one day, and there was Pat over there. And I see this Super Cub, and he's and it's buzzing around, you know, and it's going all over, and he lands, and I go over and introduce myself, you know, and we're talking. I look at his plane, and there's like tape all over it, and there's glue all over it. Thing probably weighed 20 pounds. I'm like, I can't believe that thing even flies, you know. So pretty soon, you know, we hooked up and we were flying together, and Pat was just so carefree. He's like, you know, he's up there upside down and inverted, and he's dragging the tail across the ground, you know, just laughing and carrying on. It didn't matter. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. So he really brought me around to where, you know, hey, this is fun. If you crash, it's okay. Yeah. It's no big deal, you know, like – I remember when we got our P-51s and you wiped out into the curb, completely broke it apart. We grab it, throw the CA on it, 10 minutes, you know, we're back in the air and we're cranking around.
Yeah, the sooner you realize that crashing is just part of the experience and think of it as, you know, just another part of it rather than a hassle, the sooner you're going to have more fun. So something to keep in mind, and it has been something, like you say, that the Park Zone T-28 was when it became a little bit more approachable for you. I couldn't imagine. I've never flown balsa or built-up planes, but for me, I remember one of my first bigger planes was a Park Zone Stinson.
Oh, yeah. You had that plane, Pat. You have to tell them what happened to yours. Yeah.
And I may have told a little bit of the story on the flight test podcast, but anyways, it ended up in a fence, and it was actually my dad's fault. He was flying it, but stuck into a fence like a dart. But that was like my baby, even though it was just a foam plane. And then transitioning from those kind of planes to the swappable series when I started working with flight test and I met Josh and everything, that's when my eyes really open when it's like, you know, you can't have fun if you're stressing about every little detail and, you know, scratching your plane up. The crash actually should be the most fun part.
Right, right. And nowadays it is. It's like if I crash something, then it's like, no big deal. You know, you either glue it back together, or you buy another fuselage for $50 sure. and you throw the electronics in.
Or take the electronics out.
Yeah, or build something else and throw it. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think that's what makes it fun, at least for me, and keeps me engaged because, you know, my first experience ever was when I was probably 14 and my dad trying to teach me some responsibility said, well, son, I'm going to give you my credit card. This is the first time you're going to be responsible for buying things and paying for things, but it's just for gas and make sure if you charge $20 or $30 in gas that you pay it right off. So I took the card and I think the first day I went over to the hobby store and bought an RC plane right, and then took it in the basement so he wouldn't see what I bought on his card, not knowing that he's going to get the statement. You know, being 14, you try to follow the directions step by step and you see, wow, you know, especially back then, it wasn't just, you know, I'm going to be up flying in 2 hours. It was I'm going to be up flying in maybe 2 weeks.
Right.
And you put everything together and, you know, I took it out to the field and took off, got it off the ground. My knees are shaking, you know, I'm wobbling. Yes. I'm like, my God, what am I doing? It's too late to get back on the ground. Here I just spent 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks building this thing, and I got it turned around. And, of course, you know, never doing that before, you know, my inputs were backwards, and I ended up flying that thing right into a tree. So it had about, you know, 30 seconds of flight time.
Yep.
And at the time, I had an uncle on the fire department, so I called him, and he got the truck with the ladder. It's right up here at Dogwood Park.
You got to be kidding me.
So I got the plane back, but it was in pieces, and that kind of, you know, I kind of learned my lesson. I didn't even attempt it until, you know, 20 years later.
That reminds – just a quick, real quick story. It reminds me. We were at Butler Park, and we had the model rockets, you know, that, you know, you shoot up. Mm-hmm. And it was a little windy that day, and the kids were all excited. So first try, we shoot the thing up in the air, and it drifts over, and it goes into a tree. So we venture I'm not proud to say this, but we venture over there, and it is way up there. And it wasn't a big tree. It was a smaller tree, you know, but it was way up there, and the kids were just devastated. Oh, Dad, you got a rocket in a tree. We'll never be able to. I mean, just – I looked at my wife and said, honey, go home and get the saw. She's like, what? I said, go home and get the saw and bring it back. So she did. She went home and got the – not chainsaw, but a big handsaw. I got in the garage, and we cut the tree down and got the rocket out of the tree, needless to say. But
You're going to have haters on you.
I know.
See, that's what's so nice about flying with you. You bring your kids, and then when, you know, we're flying over the field and we lose a canopy or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
We've got somebody to go out and look for it.
Yeah, that is true. That brings me up to something else I was thinking about with RC, especially with RC flying, is like the diversity you can get with it. Like there are days where Wayne and I maybe had a stressful week or something, and Saturday he'll say, hey, bring out the Mystique and grab the Radian, you know, and it's summertime and we grab our lawn chairs and we grab our drink and we go out there and we chuck these things in the air, put a couple clicks of right rudder on them and let them circle around while we're sipping iced tea, and it's so relaxing, you know. We're trying to catch thermals and drinking our iced tea and talking about the week, you know, and it's so, you know. And then there's other times where, you know, I want to fly something fast and I'll break out the Ultra Jet, you know, thing does 120 miles an hour, but I can only fly it for like 5 minutes because I'm sweating, I'm shaking, you know, you know, when you're done, you just land and you're like, okay, I'm done. I want to go home and sleep.
Good job. Let's go home.
Yeah. Yeah. So I it's just crazy that, you know, the diversity that you can get. You know, in the RC.
And I think one crucial element of this hobby is flying with other people. You know, I started out flying pretty much by myself.
Because
it can be tough, but I would encourage passing the transmitter. Even it is risky. You might lose a plane, but you gain a memory. And more than likely, that person will hopefully buy you a new one or maybe even buy themselves one. And, you know, and then you got somebody else to continue on the journey with. And every time you crash or repair something, you grow and you learn a little bit about it.
Right.
People are always calling in asking me specific questions like, oh, well, you know, with the FT Duster, what happens if I use this size motor with this size prop and this size battery? I'm just like, I don't know. Try it and let me know.
Yeah, give it a shot. Call us back. Let us know if it works. Then the next person calls will say, nope, that motor don't work.
Yeah, because that's honestly the best way to go about it. And everybody has a little bit different style and has different needs and wants and what they're going to fly. And those are achieved by, you know, different hardware and different things that you got to put on the plane. And the only way to learn about that is to try different things and figure out what's your style.
Right.
So.
And I'll let Wayne talk a little bit about it, but we have some beavers on floats and we went out to the lake Now, I don't know if I'm just naive. Like, I've had planes on floats before, and I never really even thought about it. How different is it? And took off. Now, me personally, I think taking off and landing with a big set of floats on the water, for me, is easier. Like, I've bought some serious landings on water, and the thing just hits, bounces, you know. And I've even flipped them over before, which ain't too big a deal. Generally, I let it drift in. Hopefully, the wind's going the right way, and they drift in the shore. You flip it over, you know, dry it out, and keep going. So I took Wayne out, and why don't you tell him about your first time on floats, Wayne?
All right. Well, let's start this thing off first of all. Chris can fly like nobody's business. He can fly inverted. He's a flyer. He is really good. I am still quite a bit of newbie, so I still have orientation issues on occasions. I do battle the dumb. So, the first time we were out there, we just go try this flying our beavers out on floats, and beautiful morning. I mean, the lake was absolutely glass. It was, the fog was lifting, absolutely beautiful. But man, I tell you what, I am fully aware that we're flying over top of water, and I am shaking so bad you can hear my lanyard whacking up against the radio.
I mean, his hands were literally, I'm watching him just, he was shaking, and I'm like, Wayne, it's all right, buddy. Man, you got this. Just, you know, trying to calm him down. And he did fantastic. He had no problems. But I've never seen anybody.
It's nerve-wracking. I feel you. I feel you, Wayne. It's nerve-wracking being on water. Even though you, deep down inside, you know the plane won't sink.
Right. Cause right.
Because it's foam.
Exactly.
but it just plane crash on water, it just is kind of an intense thing to think about.
Well, but the same plane, same floats out on snow. And I never thought twice about it.
That's true.
Threw it out there and took off and never was nervous. But then again, I know that that's was a lot softer, and I don't have to worry about it sinking or flipping over.
What kind of beaver is it?
That's the Fly Zone beaver.
Fly Zone, Those are great, by the way.
That thing is just unbelievable.
I think I flew Chad's, and it flies great. Now, way better than my Stinson, because they're kind of the same, but the Stinson is not nearly as forgiving as the beaver.
Right. Now, Pat, you had the Stinson, right?
I did, yes.
You did have the Stinson.
You had it.
Now, I noticed a little hesitation in his voice.
Now,
nice-looking airplane.
One thing about Pat I've realized is sometimes Pat, like, he's a great pilot, and I've seen him do amazing things. But he'd be like, hey, Pat, your elevator's it'll be okay. Don't worry about it. And I think that day wasn't – what was it? One of the – something was wrong with the plane to begin with, right? Didn't you have something unhooked or broke?
Well, you know, on the Stinson, it's got the wing struts.
That's right.
Two plastic wing struts, and each strut has an upper clevis pin and a lower clevis pin.
Right.
And I think I had the airplane broken down, so I had the wings off. Of course, you know, you take the struts off. And I can't remember. I mean, it was a nice day out.
Yeah, it was so beautiful.
Those struts help with the wing.
Oh, absolutely.
We found that out. Just like in real life,
I'd say it's 50% spar and 50% wing.
It's definitely part of the structure, so to speak. But
I think you forgot a pin or something.
I think I forgot a clevis pin. And you know, I was up just flying around nice and lazy and then decided to pull out of a high-speed
nosedive.
Probably pulled like 9 Gs. And airplane made an attempt to level off, and then the wings just folded
that
up.
Thing folded up. I mean, it was just like funk, and that straight down it went instantly.
Actually, I had a similar experience. I mentioned earlier that it darted into a fence. That just reminded me that I did actually piece it together and bought a couple new parts and went out and was flying it. And I was using actually a little bit heavier battery, too. I think it was like a 2600 or 2800 or something like that. And it was going good, but at the same thing. I was fairly inexperienced at the time, and one of my favorite things to do is get as much altitude as you can and then just take it into a swirling dive. And I was doing it, and as I was climbing, before I went into the maneuver, this car, I was at a soccer field, and this car pulled up and was just watching me. They were interested in the plane. And I brought it into this dive and pulled out, and the wings just completely folded, and the thing just smacked right into the concrete right in front of this car. Like, they were, like, right in front of their hood. And they didn't even get out of the car or anything, and I just, like, was looking, and I was, like, completely astonished. And I walked up, and I was looking at them, looking at the plane, and I just picked up all the pieces and went and got back in.
I've been there.
It was quite embarrassing. Yep,
but when no one's watching, though, it's the greatest feeling that to watch and just go down. How's this going to end up?
I don't think they said anything because they just felt bad for me. Yeah. Poor guy out here flying by himself.
Yeah, but how many times have we just burned one in and like, oh, that was the coolest thing.
I know. Did you see that? I know. But the best, I mean, this was fantastic. We have two of the Park Zone P-51s that we've flown thousands of flights on. And there for a while, we were doing formation. I mean, we were getting, I'm flying upright, he's flying inverted, vice versa. I mean, we'd get people come out and watch us at the park. Well, one day, I think it was in the morning, we were out cranking around, and we had our T-28s.
Yeah.
And Jackson High School had something going on, and a bus was there. And I bet there was probably 100 people there. Do you remember this? Do you know where I'm going with this? Yes. So we'll tell you what happened afterwards, but first we didn't know. So we're cranking around and we're, you know, everybody's clapping and going ooh and ah and doing all this kind of thing. And next thing I know, Pat's going, what? Wait, I don't have control. What? And next thing we know, we see this T-28 just burn in through this chain link fence. And it looked like a paper shredder. He hit this fence and they come out the other side. It was nothing but pieces. And you hear 100 people go, ooh.
Yeah, nothing like, you know, a bunch of high school kids watching you burn one in.
Oh, man. I mean, it was
I went
hysterical.
Over and picked that thing up, and there wasn't a piece that wasn't the shape of the diamond exactly. chain link fence. It looked like it was like Jell-O going through that thing.
That thing was shredded. And here what happened was we found out was the battery on, you know, has the regular batteries on the back of a DX6i.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them got a little bit of corrosion on it, and the radio just cut off. We cleaned it up, put it back in, and it turned right back on.
Yeah, and I remember when it was happening, we were flying over the parking lot.
Right.
And I was at a turn, a left-hand bank, and I just said, oh, Chris, I can't control this anymore.
Right.
And then I just watched it do a nosedive, and I knew it was going to happen.
Oh, man, like, it was just classic.
You know, you get discouraged, but then it's like, man, that was the coolest thing. I watched the fence eat that.
So after that, you must have got another T-28. What are you on, your third one now?
Yeah, I've got – well, you know, I learned a long time ago that when I buy an airplane – you know, I almost immediately go on and buy a spare wing and a spare fuselage because when I don't want to say destroy, but when I crash one, whatever I can't salvage or glue back together, I don't want to get it back up.
Right, right.
And I don't know, wait for 3 days shipping until it shows up, so I just get one off the bat.
So I'm trying to think. Maybe it was been a year later or so, and then must have been your second one. We were out flying again, and your elevator was – well, I think it was your elevator was loose that day, right?
Yeah. So, you know, something happened. And I mean, it's just the rule where the elevator attaches to the horizontal stab.
Yeah.
Just that real thin connection.
Yeah. And it was a little wobbly or something. You're like, it'll be okay. I'm only going to fly like a battery or something.
Something and, we saw. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, are you sure you want to do that? I don't care.
That'll be fine. Don't worry about it, you know. Next thing we know, he was up buzzing around, and we see the elevator just go, whoop. He just came right off of the plane. Just smashed down into the parking lot of the school. I mean, just smashed it in.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I thought another one I had, and I thought this was when you were talking about, is when – remember when I was flying around and I was actually flying over the school and something happened and I was either doing a loop or I lost control or something like that, and airplane went down behind the school. And I heard it smack, and we thought, oh, man, I'm going to have to climb on the roof of the school to get this thing. And then all of a sudden, we see it flying up out of the school.
Oh, that's – yeah.
And the only thing that happened was I lost the gear.
Yeah. That's right. I do remember
my wheels
that.
Are still up on the high school somewhere. Like, how did this thing keep flying? Because we lost the sight of it, right?
That's
remember?
Right.
Remember when
yes.
behind the school?
And we thought,
went
oh,
behind
it's
the school,
done.
I'm like, and this thing's on the roof.
Yeah.
Like, kabam. And then we pulled up, but yeah, I think right next to that area is where the elevator came off that
right.
second plane I had.
Right.
It went in because you climbed over the fence, and I remember
we stuck Aiden up underneath it or something to get him in the first time, didn't we?
Yeah. Or he crawled under you know the gate on the fence. There was a space there that he could crawl under. So he's handing us through the fence, you know, a big bloated battery and you know broken prop, and it was just you're gonna have to make a lot of trips.
Yeah.
Get my plane back.
That was
so that was at a – you said it was at a high school?
Yeah, we fly up behind Jackson High School.
Okay.
Because it's huge. There's what? At least three soccer fields, a full-size football field, a practice field.
Baseball field.
Baseball field. There's tons and tons of room up there.
Nice.
Yeah.
So do you have any other locations you guys fly at?
We go over to Northwest High School. We fly over there only because it's a pretty nice paved runway. And then, like, well, actually, they're the back parking lots, but you got one running east and west and north and south. So, kind of no matter what the wind's doing, you know.
Yeah.
So that's mostly where we fly.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I normally fly at there's a little soccer field in Wadsworth. I think it's got about like maybe 6 to 8. Soccer field. Some of them are like junior size, and then some of them are full size. So it's a pretty good field. The only thing is, it's kind of close to Wadsworth Airport, which is a small little airport. But you do have to be careful with it. But yeah, I don't fly in any kind of club normally. Obviously, since I've been working at Flight Test, I fly here at the shop quite a bit. Smaller stuff. It's not really big enough for the big stuff.
Right. I think I can get my Carbon Z Cub in here and crank
I bet
it
you could.
Though.
Well, shoot, at the Horizon Indoor event, he was flying it indoors.
On floats,
yeah. Doing barrel rolls, knife edge, high alpha knife edge kind of things. It was
and taking off and landing very, in that tiny pond.
Yeah, it was probably about 20 feet, right. 25 feet, and that was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But going back to locations, that could be a cool thing for this podcast is to you know, figure out more places. I know there's a place that they hold an annual event for slope soaring up on Lake Erie.
Really?
Which is supposed to be. They have like a championship or kind of competition.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think it could be something that we could explore.
Yeah.
Different locations in our area and different ways to go about finding good flying fields and how to go about doing that. I think that could be really fun.
Right. Speaking of that kind of diversity and location area, have you guys like find yourself maybe like when you first started, like for instance, kind of when I got going, I was like really into warbirds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I met Wayne and he was into soaring. So, that, you know, he kind of brought me in. I mean, I did a little bit when the Radian come out because that plane was, you know, so awesome. But then, you know, Wayne really got me into thermal soaring. So then we were doing that for a while. And then we met David and he's like, you ever do a DLG? And we're like, what's a DLG? What's that? You know, discus hand launch. And we're like, what? You can what? You know, and so we started doing that. And, you know, you guys... You know, ever find that, you know, with your flying?
How you evolve into different areas of the hobby?
I might go with one for a while and then hang it up for a little bit and go to something else, but then come back to that, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think so. Lately, I've been on a multi-rotor kick. I've been trying to tune up my tricopter to make it so it keeps up with David's.
Oh,
but it's tough.
Good luck on that one.
Yeah.
Huh?
But, yeah, it's you definitely go in phases. I was in an ultra micro phase for a while there just because I could just literally walk out of my garage and just throw it and just fly anywhere. And the swappable series, I was having a lot of fun with that Spitfire.
Oh, that thing's awesome.
I drove that Spitfire into the ground so many times. And it's still – the foam was not even white anymore by the time I was done with it. It was like faded brownish color. It had grass stains all over it.
Huh.
So, yeah, definitely see what you're saying with
right.
it. It continually evolves and you keep learning and – the main thing I learned with multi-rotors is that they do not have a glide slope.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Hey, speaking of multi-rotors, you guys, didn't you guys get a bunch of stuff in from Ready to Fly Quads?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think actually David mentioned, I forget the gentleman's name, but David was in contact with him and after we received his package that he sent us. We just came to work one day and we had this giant treasure box full of goodies from Ready to Fly Quads, and even David, we were all impressed, but even David was thoroughly impressed with the, he sent us two quads, one little kind of acrobatic quad and then one FPV quad with a gimbal and stuff, similar to like a TBS Discovery, little bit different build quality, but even David was thoroughly impressed with everything that, from the components that he sent us to the build quality, and which speaks a lot because David is very rarely.
Yeah, he's pretty picky.
Sometimes he's impressed, but very rarely is he thoroughly impressed. So we're definitely going to be doing some content on that. We're going to do some episodes, and I think David did talk a little bit about it in one of the other flight test podcasts. But they use a multi-Wii board, T-motor. It's all top shelf stuff,
right.
So it's super nice quality little quads, and they're fairly reasonably priced. I think you can get the little mini Acro quad for like $300, ready to fly.
Wow, that's not bad.
Plug it in, and you they all use a multi-Wii board. And Chris, you recently tested one of those out, didn't you?
Yeah, I stopped in yesterday and see what's going on. I was going to help out, sweep the floors or whatever. But anyway.
Well, you didn't have to go to work
for
2 days.
We're in this deep freeze here in Ohio.
Deep freeze. It's like -20 out right
now. I
know.
It stinks. But anyway, I was like, Chad, what can I do? You need me to do anything? He goes, yep, I want you to build a quad. I'm like, what? He goes, yep, I want this quad. Here's the parts. Put it together. Make it fly. I'm like, okay. So he gave me all the parts and everything, and I got some new stuff on it. I don't even know if it's out yet, the board that you guys are going to sell.
It's a new variation for, I think it's, you did a quad. It's
right.
Kind of like an anycopter.
Right.
But it's going to be made out of a different material and going to have some different features.
Right.
I don't know how much I'm supposed to say about
it. So. I was impressed with it, I will say that.
But so we're still in the prototyping stage of that.
Okay, gotcha.
So.
But folks down the road, it's pretty impressive. But anyway, Chad gave me all the parts and everything, and then he gave me one of their new multi-Wii controller. It was a 2.3 from Ready to Fly Quads, and he says, put it together and make it fly. So I think we got it running in, I don't know, maybe 3 hours we built it.
Yeah, that's cool. This was your first quad, too, by the way.
It was my first quad that I ever built, for one, and I don't know a whole lot about it, but I will say for throwing it together, just plugging everything in, and going out and flying it, I was really impressed with the control board. I mean, it just
Me
we
too.
Didn't even balance the props. And this thing, we took it out in the garage and fired it up and, hovered it around, and it was stable. And
no setup.
Right? Yeah, no nothing.
So was that a kit? Or?
It was just a control board, and we used the flight test, like the rotor bones kit, and Chad threw me some ESCs and some motors, and I didn't even know what I was doing. I looked at everything. He told me, like where to drill the holes and everything. But I drilled the holes. I threw it together. We plugged everything in. Wayne helped me a lot with that because I really didn't know what I was doing. And we took it out and in the garage, and that thing was phenomenal. And Wayne, what'd you think? I mean, you fly a lot of quads and
normally
tricopters.
I'm not really good at flying somebody else's stuff. I'm always a little paranoid. I'm always afraid I'll crash their things.
I feel you there too.
So if it's mine, I don't have a problem with it. But Chris handed me the controller, so I like, all right, popped it right up in the air, and man, that thing was stable. That thing was rock solid. I mean, we're in this big old garage, and I popped it up in the air, and man, that thing, we just had to do just a very little bit of trimming. Like I said, the props didn't even need balanced at the time. I mean, it was running quiet, smooth. It was really nice.
Now, I don't know if that has anything to do that it came from Ready to Fly Quads. I don't know if he does a set. I don't know much about multi-way. I've always flown on a KK2.
Right,
so we'll have to look into that and see if they really come that ready to fly right off the get-go.
According to the package, it says right on it, like the package it comes, there's not a lot of instruction.
Is that a multi-way, the package from multi-way?
No, well, it's from Ready to Fly Quads, and it has a setup right on the package, exactly what you're supposed to do. It has where to plug everything in at. It's got your motor controls. It's got your – what else do they have? Your percent – everything's on this little package, and that's the only thing we went off of, and we plugged it right in, and everything worked.
Which way the props rotate on the motor, which way it has a – And it's just a sticker. It's just a sticker that was on. It's just a label. But I tell you what, man, they had – I mean, you could sit there and look at it, and almost everything you need to know is right there.
Wow. There was no fussing around.
Now, you did say, though, that it does have a little port for a USB. So if you did want to fine-tune it or change stuff, you can.
I have to say, I don't know a lot about multi-Wii, but I know – just from general reading on the forums, like they were okay and, you know, usually pretty cheap. But from what I understand, the stuff they're bringing out now is like
super nice.
Way better, 100% better.
And David's been curious into it. I don't think he's dabbled in it too much.
Right.
But that's why he's looking forward to trying these ready to fly quads that we were sent. Because he's definitely interested. And he's been talking up multi-Wii. He says that their new stuff that's coming out is pretty impressive.
Right.
So, yeah, that's...
You know, I think for somebody to just...
And they're cheap, too. I don't know exact prices.
I think that board that's on that is $15.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's upgradable. It has... you can set it up for auto leveling. You can put a GPS on it.
Yep. Yeah, actually, the bigger quad that they sent us, the FPV quad with the gimbal and everything, it has the GPS board on it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so I was... You know, and I think... Again, I've flown a lot of quads, but I've never really built anything. But for me, just to take this thing and within a few hours, throw this thing together, just throw the board on it, and go out and crank it around in the garage, I thought was pretty.
Yeah, and compared to the KK2, the KK2 is supposed to be one of the easier boards because it has a LED screen on it. And it is easy, but it takes quite a bit more setup and tuning than this multi-Wii.
That's right.
This multi-Wii completely caught me off guard, how you just plug it in and it's good to go.
Right. That's what Wayne was saying, too. He couldn't believe how easy it was to set up.
KK2 board, there is definitely a little bit of homework to be done. I mean, there's some tweaking.
It is easy, but there still is a learning curve.
How long did it take you to get out of the box to fly?
Well, again, like I say, Chad just gave me all the parts, the arms, the rotor bone kit, the motors, ESCs. Now, you know what took the longest was soldering the stupid plugs on the motors. That's actually what took the longest.
Yeah.
But I'd say overall, like from start to finish, it took us about 3 hours maybe.
And I came in halfway through the build, so
that's not and that's not bad at all. That's quick.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
The first one, the second one, probably.
I think I could do it even quicker.
I think that's a good tip, and that's something that I've learned. If you're not really too familiar with scratch building, whether it's planes or multi rotors, when you go to buy your electronic components, that's a good thing to look for is what kind of connectors they have. Pre-soldered connectors saves you a bunch of time. So a real common one, I think, is 3.5 millimeter.
Yes. Yeah.
Bullet
yes.
connectors. So it's basically the connector that connects the ESC to the motors the motors to the power distribution. If you look and you match those up and you plan that right, you can save a whole lot of time because you don't have to do all that soldering.
Right. Yeah. So. Exactly.
Yeah, I bet you now that you've already built it, I bet you could probably build the next one in an hour, just a little over an hour. It wouldn't.
Yeah, I bet I could.
It was real clean, and it's very clean. There's not much to it as far as parts.
No.
So it goes together crazy easy.
And it's just funny because I know what you went through with your KK2 and your tricopter, you know, with your fiddling, and, you know, now obviously it's flying great. And I was expecting we're going to throw this thing on here, go out in the garage, just ricochet off the walls, but it didn't. It was just perfect. So, well, I don't want to get in too much in the detail and get too boring, but I think we still got a few stories we can talk about through our, you know, short flying careers that we have. And one thing I want to bring up, I was thinking about the other day, sitting in the house and the nasty weather and everything, is I built a UFO, Pat. And yeah, I'm sure you remember this, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I got a 48-inch round UFO that is full of lights. And it was actually funny because I thought about building it. And my wife said I was absolutely nuts. She's like, you've completely lost your mind. This thing's never going to fly, blah, blah, blah. So I got it built, and she's seen it fly actually out in the front yard. She just shook her head. And we used to take it over to the school and fly it around. But one day I called up Pat, and I said, hey, you want to fly the UFO? He's like... yeah, I do. He goes, but you want to go somewhere different? And I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. So we loaded up, and where did we go?
We went out to my uncle's farm.
That's right, out to...
Well, kind of like a, you know, not a farm, but big open field next to his business.
Right, and it's kind of not in town, but on the outskirts of town, so you still have lots of traffic. You know, there's this big open field, but you got a main road is actually off of a road called Apple Grove.
Oh. Yeah. Not a lot of light pollution. Not,
yeah,
you know, it's,
right.
It's, when it's dark out there, right. It's dark.
Right. So... we got this thing up, and we started cranking around, and we're having a good time, and your uncle thought it was a trip. He's just laughing and giggling and carrying on. Well, pretty soon, we started noticing the traffic on Apple Grove started stopping, and they were pulling over alongside of the road.
It was like 9 o'clock at night. It was the stars were out. I mean, it was dark.
Right. And I mean, you know, pretty soon, we seen people getting out of their cars, you know, and looking around, and I was starting to get a little nervous, you know, so we brought it in a little bit, and we were talking, and they're like, forget it, put it back up again. So we took this thing up, and I went a little higher, and once you got, like, quite a ways up above the tree line, it floats so well, you can just shut the motor off, and that thing will just kind of cruise around. So yeah. Here you got this 48-inch UFO with all these lights going in around it. Again, pretty soon, all the traffic started stopping, people were getting out of their cars, his uncle was laughing.
He shows up on a golf cart.
Yeah.
He's like, what's going on?
No one
warned him, you know, we were out there screwing around in his field.
This is the best entertainment I've had in years. So, and then it ended up, I think it was a sheriff, I don't remember if it was the local cops or the sheriff showed up. And they're out of their cars. They got spotlights. They're going all around. They're trying to spotlight, you know, and everything. And I was like, Pat, we got to land this thing. Get out of here. We're going to go to jail. We're going to be on this 6 o'clock news. We're going to be in deep trouble. So we finally landed and got out of there. But I was always a little nervous to go back and do that again. But we might have to try that this summer.
That was fun.
Yeah. Because, for one, Wayne's working on some new lights. Why don't you talk a little bit about this light system you got working on, huh?
Yeah, I decided on this bat bone that I got that I decided to put the digital LED tape on it and use the Arduino board and do some crazy light patterns on it. And I was doing the same thing with you guys saying, but I was out in my front yard and I killed the front lights. And so I'm just flying around in my front yard and just checking out the lights and trying the different combinations. And all of a sudden, you could just feel that presence where you could feel cars starting to stop because I live on a fairly busy road and cars are driving by. But then all of a sudden, you can hear them stop. It's a tricopter, so you don't take your eyes off of it. But it's just kind of a little unnerving when you're flying around and all these crazy lights on there.
It's even worse when you have goggles on. But it's kind of the same thing. I know what you're saying. You don't want to take your eyes off it, but you hear stuff going on around you.
Well, Chris and I, we have just regular LED lights on our radians.
Yeah.
And we were flying around Jackson High School one evening, and we're back here in the back. And here, there's a guy that was about a block and a half away.
Oh,
and
he's seen the lights. I forgot about that.
And he drove over, and he just wanted to see what these lights were that were flying around up in the air.
We could have a lot of fun. You could take tricopter with lights like that.
It's
just like a UFO or something, and then take some fishing line and then hook it up to on the bottom to a stuffed cow or something like that.
Okay.
Well, with farm animal abductions. With a spotlight from the, you know, from the bottom of the copter.
Well, I was even thinking about, I got some spotlights that are on the bottom of it, you know, so you could come over a road and turn the spotlights on, get some Close Encounters music.
Yeah. Might as well put speakers on it, too. Yeah.
Exactly. Get
like a Barbie horse suspended from the bottom. Because at night, well, I think when we were doing that, you were saying, because you could look out there, and we knew how far it was,
right.
But it was very deceiving.
It
was. Depth perception.
Yeah.
You didn't know
if
it was, and someone, you know, my uncle told us, he says, I thought that was way, you know, half a mile away. I didn't know it was right over here.
Yeah.
So, you string a little animal, stuffed animal on the bottom of that, and someone might think it's a...
We'll definitely go to jail then. We'll be calling my wife. We got a little problem.
Another thing that Josh Bixler likes to do is he'll put a switch on so you can turn the lights on and off.
Yeah, I got... Yep.
And he loves to fly. He loves the Kraken. That's like his go-to plane for like the past... Ever since he made it, pretty much, the past 6 months or so. And... the thing's so slow and docile that he'll take it off without the lights –
and just kind of fly it almost blind, kind of see it. He lives out in the country too, so if it's a clear night, you can kind of see at night, but he'll get some altitude and get way up there and then flip the lights on. And then he said that, I'm pretty sure he told me one time that he was flying, he would fly every night or every other night or occasionally, and he'd do that, and he'd go over the trees and get way up there and get some altitude and turn the lights on and just fly around and then turn them off and come back in.
Oh.
And eventually he said that he was talking to somebody, you know, downtown or wherever at the store. He runs into somebody, and just in conversation, they say, yeah, I saw these weird lights the other night. And Josh started laughing, and he's like, that was me, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's too much fun. Pat, you got to tell them, now before we go in the detail with this, for all the animal rights activists out there, no animals were harmed. We were just having a little fun. But you got to tell them about the groundhog story, the one day we were dive bombing the poor groundhog out in the middle of the field.
I think we were over at the library.
Right.
Flying in the parking lot because we had that's where I used to go to fly to, you know, it was paved and there weren't light poles.
Yep.
So that was kind of where I would do nice, you know, take off and landings with anything that had wheels. I had an apprentice that was just the nicest airplane for the longest time, and I'd love to fly it off of that pavement. It was such a good place to fly. But we were out there one day, and I think, you know, as always, you show up with your truck jam-packed with airplanes, you know, and kids all scrunched up in the corner, you know, and the airplanes are stretched across the back. And so we were playing around, and you know, we went through a couple of batteries, and then we got the P-51s out, and I think we were chasing each other around with these P-51s, and then we noticed up against the building there was one or two groundhogs. They were just out there, you know, digging for grubs, moving around, and so we started to stray from the groundhogs, going way out and then coming down and dive bombing these groundhogs. And we would take turns doing it. And, you know, we were far enough away.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't even notice. You know, they were, like, just doing their thing.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, it wasn't intentional, but I went down to strafe this groundhog, and he was sitting up on his hind quarters, you know, just kind of looking around.
Yeah.
Didn't see anything coming, and I probably got within 6 inches of that guy. And the funniest thing was he ducked like he just saw his life flash.
Right, like he's like, what just happened? You know, he's looking around, you know, he doesn't see anything.
And it was just something. I mean, I thought, man, if I would have hit that thing, I would have felt terrible.
So then we got the idea. He didn't know what was going on. He's all looking around. So Pat would come in on one side and dive by him on the other. And then I'd come in on the other side and dive by this poor groundhog. He didn't know where to go, where to run, what to do. He's just, It was hysterical.
That is funny. I have a similar story. Actually, it was, I think it was two weekends ago. Well, for Christmas, I built everybody got planes from, or quads or something rather for me. I built my dad an F-22, which is, keep an eye out on the flight test store because it's one of the new ones that's going to be coming it's not swappable, but it is the same kind of foam. It's a really, really awesome plane. But anyways, I built my dad that. I built my little brother Luke a Spitfire. And it's kind of his first plane. He's flown a little bit before, but he's never owned anything. And he got a DX-6, and I built him a Spitfire for Christmas. And about two weekends ago, we came out to the flight test headquarters and for his maiden. And we burned a couple batteries, and we were buddy boxing, and he was getting the hang of it. And after he started to get comfortable with it, I let him buddy box with my dad because I didn't want him to solo. Buddy box with my dad. So they're flying around, and I take up my tricopter. And actually, by the way, if you're interested in seeing this video, is on YouTube. I just posted it the other day. If you look up, I think it's called like Luke's Maiden with the Spitfire Flight Test HQ or something like that. Yeah, YouTube it anyways. So they're flying around, and I'm off towards the door by the headquarters, by the building, sitting in a chair because I'm flying FPV. My brother and I'm following Luke around, flying a Spitfire, and they're buddy boxing, and they're off in the field to take off and land a little bit farther away from the building, far away from me. And I'm just following them, and we actually had one midair collision, but it was very uneventful. We just kind of hit each other and nothing happened. So that was good. But towards the end of the flight, I just hear my dad and my brother start screaming. And my dad's just like, possum, possum. It was the middle of the day.
Which is unusual.
Super sunny, yeah. So yeah. This possum must have been sick or something, but I didn't see it at the time because I was looking through the goggles and they didn't have the resolution to see it. But from the beginning of the video all the way to the towards the end, you see this little dot every time I fly over my dad and my brother and they're flying the plane. You see this little dot keep moving. It just creeping towards them. It just keeps walking slowly. Got about 5 feet away from them, and that's when they noticed it when it was so quiet.
Holy cow!
And so their buddy boxes and their transmitters are connected together. So they're trying to run away and fly the plane, and they got to stay close to each other. And I just hear this yelling. So eventually, I stop following the Spitfire, and I go over there and look. And my dad's going after. He finds a stick, and he's like going after it, like chasing it away. Because it was really weird how that came up.
Right.
And those things are pretty nasty. And we didn't kill it or anything. But my dad chased it, you know, through the flight test headquarters, which is an old driving range. So there's this big open roofed in area, and there's a bunch of junk in there, and it kept running around in there. And so that was just funny. And I tried to get up as close as I could to the possum, but.
Wow.
By that time, it was kind of spooked and started to run away.
Right. Have you guys seen any more coyotes out back since
then? No, just the one. I've seen the one multiple times. There's one coyote that lives out the back here. Again, it's not abandoned, but an old driving range. There's one coyote, and it walks with a limp. It's got one hurt leg.
Wow. But, I mean, to be in town like this to see a coyote, that's crazy.
Well, I think what it is that there's like a little kind of ecosystem within this driving range. Because it's all pretty much fenced in.
Oh, I got you.
And we see the same deer. In the summer, this is a groundhog heaven.
Right.
There's literally probably 15 groundhogs.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if you're ever here and walking through the field, be careful. David almost broke his leg one time. He fell into a groundhog hole, and it went far past up his knee, like all the way up to his femur.
You got to be kidding.
Yeah.
Only
deep.
David.
It was deep, yeah.
Only David.
He was carrying like a plane and a transmitter, too. So he's just like,
help me, help me. Wow. Did you have something, Pat? Oh, no? All right. No. Do you remember when I first got the Radian? And we took it out. I didn't really even know what thermal flying was. Like, I read about it, and we were cranking that thing around, and we caught a thermal. I'll back up a little bit. I mostly, was flying warbirds, and I watched a couple videos on the radio, and I thought, man, I don't know. That thing doesn't look like it's for me. You know, I was like, I don't. But, for what I think the thing still sells for, what, $159 for a plug-and-play for a giant, 78-inch wingspan foam plane. I thought, what the heck? So I bought it and took it out and flew it a couple times and was hooked. I was like, man, this thing's great. You can go up, 200 feet, shut the motor off, and glide around. Man, I can fly for a half hour on one battery. That was my thing. It was like, great, So one day, it was a good thermal day that I figured out later. We had the big cumulus cloud, and everything. So we were out, me and you were out cranking around, and that thing caught a thermal. I mean, we caught a boomer. And I'm like, look, Pat, this thing's going up. Where did it go? This thing went up so fast and so high that it just went out of sight so quick. And we thought we lost
that.
It. You remember
yeah,
that? I mean, it just... out of sight.
Smaller and smaller speck.
And it was within seconds. Not minutes. I mean seconds. It went that quick. And that's probably the biggest thermal boomer that I've ever had around here.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So I just cut the power, and I helped, put it in a spiral, full back, full left. And I bet it was minutes. We're like, it's gone. We don't know where it's at. I was about ready to just put the transmitter down and go home, And I think, and you caught it out of the corner of your eye. It was like probably half a mile away over Bueller's grocery store. He's seen this little tiny speck coming out of this cloud. And we caught it.
You don't know if it's coming or going.
Yeah, we had no idea. I was like, I don't know. And we got that thing back that day.
Wow,
and ever
nice.
Since then, even now, when I'm flying and thermaling, I get nervous. Matter of fact, on both my planes now, I got altimeters, and I got another story. We'll talk about the altimeters, but now I can watch it, and you can kind of see how how fast they're going. Yeah. That makes me nervous, man.
Yeah, nothing worse than when something goes out of sight or if you're flying FPV and you lose signal.
Yes.
Oh, it's just your stomach sinks.
Right.
That reminds me real quick, when we were doing a recent episode of Flight Test, the FPV face-off, where it was Chad was flying the Talon, the green thing.
Yeah.
David was flying a Penguin, and Josh was flying a Kraken. Josh's was the slowest, and David's had a pretty good envelope. It was quick, and it could slow down to about Josh's speed. Chad's was probably about three times as fast as everybody.
I remember that video.
And when we were filming that, Chad flew that thing so far away, so fast, that he didn't realize how far away it was, and started to lose signal. So he took his goggles off, and he was looking around, and I was running camera, so I didn't have an exact location on him, and it was just gone. And we were looking around, and eventually I see this little tiny speck. At this point, he hands the transmitter to Josh, and Josh is like, what
am I going to do? Yeah,
this was before they were all three flying, by the way, too. Josh, they just threw Chad's up, and they were making sure that it was good before.
So right off the bat, this happened.
Yeah, he took off FPV and just started flying, and before he knew it, he was miles out, and we see it way – if it wasn't painted green – We would have lost it, and Josh just started playing with the controls. We had no idea which way it was going, and Josh just started playing with the controls. He's like, "Okay, hit left," and it went left. So he just kept bringing it around, and eventually it came back. But man, that was spooky because that could have been bad. That's a big plane.
Yes. And speaking of that, how many times have you seen David fly FPV with the goggles on? He's sitting on the ground in his little Indian style, cranking around. He goes, Lost signal.
Yeah.
And he's still going. Goggles still down.
Yeah.
Like 30 seconds later, oh, got signal back. Okay. And he cranks. I don't know how he does that. Yeah. I'd be whipping the goggles off, freaking out, going, where's it at?
Yeah, it's tough, though, to transition from flying FPV to line of sight or vice versa.
Yeah.
A thing that Chad can do, and I think I've seen Josh do it too, is they'll take off line of sight and then fly it away for a little bit.
Right, and then put the goggles down.
Which I don't think is too difficult, but I've never done it before.
Would you put them on right away and just take off?
Yeah, and I only fly FPV so far multi-rotor, so you just take off from the ground, hover, and just get out of there. David's kind of taught me to just punch it, get it off the ground, and start flying, and get out of there. It may be easier with a plane, but multi-rotor, I couldn't take off line of sight and then switch to FPV. I can do either or, but not on the same flight.
Wow,
so
that's crazy.
Now I know where you're starting to go with this.
With what?
When you're talking about the radians and putting an altimeter on there.
Yes.
And it kind of goes together with what Alex was asking about places to fly.
Yes.
When we went down to Malvern.
Yes. Tell them a little bit about that, Wayne. Tell them about where it's at.
Is that the place you guys went in the mountains with the big bulls?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
yes. This story. We'll get into the story, but I look back at this, you know what we went through and what an amazing day it was, and we took hardly any pictures.
You showed me a couple.
I have a couple.
Of the big bulls with the horns.
Yeah, and I got a couple of Wayne flying. But
maybe we can post them in the show notes.
We can, before we get into that, maybe we should down the road look into that. Maybe if you guys that are listening would like that, if we're talking about stories or have pictures, we could maybe post that up they do for the Flight Test podcast.
I think that
would be a good idea.
Yeah. And another thing too, like I was saying with that possum story, the videos on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, we'll try to do more stuff like that.
Link it up.
Yeah, and if we do a review on a product and test something out, maybe we'll film it or take pictures of it and post it on a location on the internet where you guys can take a look at it.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit more content than just the audio.
So you can kind of know what we were talking about and.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, back to
go on.
Back to the farm.
That was what was really amazing with this day was the fact that if we would have turned and walked away when we first were confronted by all these horned cows, we would have missed an awesome opportunity to fly. We'll get into the flying a little bit later, but yeah, we come walking up the hill and Chris is leading. He's up ahead of me. And all of a sudden I hear, Wayne, and I look up, and oh, no, there's a bull standing there. And I mean, this thing's not, it couldn't have been 20 yards away from him. And I mean, it's standing there just staring down over the hill at us. So I just gently put my equipment over to the side, and we kind of walk up to see what's going on, and we come up over the crest of this hill, and oh, you've got to be kidding. I bet you there was 50, 60, 80, if not 100 of them standing around, and every one of them got horns like you wouldn't believe.
And they're all staring at us.
Yes.
Now, first of all, I'll paint a little picture. We've heard about this place. Well, Wayne's actually even been there before, yes. But we've heard about this place for years, you know, and it's being that close. And we were even down at the Horizon Indoor a year before, and I got into it a discussion from some guy in Kentucky. Somehow we got on the subject of planes, and he goes, "Hey, have you ever heard of the farm?" I'm like, "You got to be kidding me!" So I guess the place, it used to be probably pretty well known. So we
Where is this at again?
It's in Malvern.
Malvern.
Yeah, it's.
That's where Austin is from.
Right,
and Malvern, Ohio, which is northeastern Ohio.
Right, right, and it's a giant farm, and it's just the perfect location where it's kind of all flat all around it, and it just has this beautiful sloping hill that's probably, I don't even know how big it is.
If you get a southwestern wind, it is awesome.
It's just perfect.
Absolutely great. Now, so, let's go back to the cows.
Okay. Before we get to the cows, though, we get there, and it was a beautiful day, and it was like in November, too. We got a 70-degree day, and we couldn't pass it up, so we get down there, and we wanted to kind of get permission, even though we've heard you could go there and fly. But we knocked on the door, and nobody was home. So we drove up and down the road a couple times and debating. We didn't know what to do. And finally, I'm like, you know what? We're here. We got the planes. We're parking, and we're flying. And the trek up there is
it's a walk.
We got planes, and we got batteries, and we got
toolboxes.
I mean, we're halfway up. I'm sweating. I'm tired. My legs hurt. And I'm like, oh, man, I just want to get up on top of this hill.
Now tell everybody what color coat you're wearing.
And naturally, I was wearing a bright red sweatshirt. And, I mean, when I popped my head up over this hill, when I seen the first bull, I was like, oh, man, what are we going to do? I didn't want to go all the way back down. So I was telling Wayne, I go, all right, I'm going to drop all my stuff. You know, I grew up on a farm. I've been around cows my whole life. We'll get them out of here. So I walk up on the hill, and I'm yelling and get out of the way. And when I got to the very top and looked, and there was like 60, 70, 80 of them all staring at me, I just froze. I didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, we are dead. What do we do now, Wade? What do we do? If we move, they're going to mow us down. You know, I didn't know what to do.
There's no fence, right?
No fence. You're inside the pasture.
Inside, yeah.
So it's like, what do you do? And, you know, we hee-hawed around for probably, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't want to carry everything back down. Finally, I was like, that's it. I'm flying. He's like, are you serious? I go, I'm flying. You watch my back. If you can't see anything, you yell and scream. I'm dropping the controller and I'm running. And we did. We finally went up there and we started flying. And I mean, within probably 20 minutes, they just kind of ignored us. And some of them laid down. Some of them were eating. Some of them were walking around us. But, I mean, talk about the flying, though. It was just phenomenal.
I took a Radiant, never used a motor, and this is the only time I've ever seen this happen where I just chucked it off the top of the hill and soared for an hour and a half. And the only reason I landed because my neck hurt. I was exhausted. But, I mean, we're just flying around, and it was absolutely beautiful. Just a perfect wind coming up that hill. And, man, then we'd catch these drifts, these thermals going up. Or whatever they'd call them. But man, the planes would just start climbing. And I mean, it would go straight up. I mean, it was like you grabbed an elevator and it was on its way up. Wow. And I'm like freaking out. It's like this plane, and you know, the Radiant, it's pretty good sized plane. Yeah. And it's getting to be a spec. And it's getting where you just drop the elevator on that thing, nose that thing down, and just put it into a spiral and try to get it down.
Yeah.
And then it'd come down, and you say, okay, good. And as soon as you let off that elevator, back up it'd go again.
Right, back up it'd go.
That's the way we flew.
It was like that all day long. Like, I went an hour and a half. My neck hurt. I mean, we needed a chair. I finally landed. He kept on going for almost 2 hours, I think, before you finally came in.
I got to give me a Radian.
Oh, you will love it.
That's the one they're thing awesome. I learned from this podcast.
They're so much fun, and they're easy to fly. And, like, we get off of work, and you just want to go out and fly. You know, it's not a big production. Mm-hmm. Just grab your radio, a bunch of batteries, your radio, and we can go out there and just chuck it up in the air and just relax. You know, we've had a busy day. We're exhausted. This is just that perfect opportunity just to sit back and watch these things. Just soar.
I'm going to have to get one of those on order.
Yeah, you'd really like it. I know you would. Well, has anybody else got anything else to share? Any stories, anything else they want to talk about?
I have plenty of stories.
Yeah. Well, shoot one. We got time for one more before we wrap this up, if you got something.
Well, not off the top of my head.
No?
I'm just, yeah.
Yeah, you're like me. I got to write them down. I can't remember them.
By the time we do this again, I'll have 30 more being around here.
Well, guys, we've been here over an hour. I hope we didn't bore you too much. We hope you enjoy it. Send us some feedback. Hit me up on Twitter at FT After Hours. Tell us what you think. If you want more, you want less, what you might want to talk about, hit me up at my email at chris@flighttest.com. Maybe we can answer some questions for you. But we just hope you enjoy it and you can relate to it. And we'll get some... different people in here once in a while. We'll probably have Alex and Wayne here all the time, and then we're going to have an open seat, and we're going to have Pat back. You know, we might have David in here, sure. Josh, Chad, might have Eric Monroe in here.
Yeah, nice.
So we're going to have a lot of different people.
Check us out on flighttest.com, because I'd imagine we're going to be posting an article for each episode, which will more than likely end up being the show notes. So the pictures and stuff that we talked about, we can post them on there. And then iTunes too, right?
Right.
Be sure to rate us and give us your honest feedback. And this is kind of one of the many aspects of flight test. So completely community driven. So we want to present content that you want to hear. So let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. And we really appreciate all your comments. So keep them coming.
Yes, thanks, guys, and we hope you enjoy it. And if you do, and we get rated and you guys like it, we'll come back and do it again and talk about some other stuff. All right?
All right.
All right.
All righty.
Thanks, guys.
I
appreciate it.
Thanks.
We'll see you next time.
All right.